Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the US have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Khalid, that is K-H-A-L-I-D. I'm running for city council in the city of South Fulton, Georgia.
Let's start with your decision to run for the city council. Talk about what made you decide to run for elected office.
Well, there were a variety of factors, but it all really begins with Bernie Sanders. I don't think any of us yet recognize how monumental his campaign was. You know, every presidential race brings into the political process a new generation of volunteers, people who are willing to like knock doors and get involved in politics.
Right.
But Bernie galvanized a group of highly educated, highly skilled activists. So these people were pretty much already politically involved. And, you know, folks like myself. And then he charged us to run for local office,
yeah,
specifically as a way of both infiltrating and transforming the Democratic Party and just working our way up the political ladder. I think one of the big mistakes that many folks on the left particularly make, but just people in general, mm-hmm, is this idea of trying to transform government and society from the top down. So we,
yeah,
focus on the big races, right? The presidential race or governor's race. We hope to get someone in office that way and that they will make this change from the top down. What we've seen, from states like North Carolina is that even when you are able to win the big seats, which is really, they're usually long shot races, but even if you're able to win the big seats, if you haven't infiltrated that party or that government structure from the ground up, it's very hard for a head of state, whether it's a governor or the president, to really institute change if they don't have a cooperative Congress or state legislature or city council.
Okay.
And then the second important thing about going the other direction is that you are really developing a set of people that vote in key positions. So for example, both with the nomination process for the Democratic Party and the elections this last month of the DNC chairs,
mm-hmm,
there weren't enough progressives in decision-making places, be it superdelegates or delegates to the convention, particularly superdelegates, but also post-seat holders.
Mm-hmm.
And county chairs that get to vote at the DNC winter meeting, right, for the DNC chair. And those positions are held by people who get into them years before those elections happen. So,
yeah,
years before the 2016 convention and years before the 2017 DNC winter meeting.
Right.
People ran for elections and got into those seats. And so it's really important that we do the really hard, long game groundwork.
Yeah.
So those were the things that sort of excited me personally as an activist and political organizer. And so I was thinking about how I could get involved in Metro Atlanta in my local area. And by the grace of God, it turned out that the area that I lived in, which was unincorporated, decided to become a city.
Yeah.
And so here, this place that I was currently living, which is also where I was born and raised, I live in the house that I grew up in as a child, was incorporating and becoming a city. So that was a natural fit. And then to learn the specifics that this city will be the largest city that Georgia, the state of Georgia, has created in over 100 years, and that it's nearly the size of the capital city itself.
Yeah.
Understanding like the size and scope of the city, which people are really just, you know, people who are not as politically involved are just becoming aware of. So every day beginning to realize how large the city is, how many different counties and municipalities we will touch. We have the possibility to have the largest progressive city in the South. If we can win 4 out of the 7 city council positions and or the mayor's office, we can really have a large progressive city, which I think is, and the third key point is that by having a city that size, that is progressive, it gives us a chance to make the argument for the progressive policies. You know, a lot of these policies that Bernie and other progressives have talked about, whether it's a $15 minimum wage or universal health care, or having election day be a national holiday. Lots of people think, oh, those are good ideas, but like they can't work. They're not sustainable. They're not economically feasible. Mm-hmm. And so we're asking people very often in national elections to take a chance on something that they have not seen at the local level or on a smaller level. So this is our shot in Georgia specifically, but in the South in general, to show that these policies actually do work and that they are not just good ideas, but they're smart ideas, and they can grow economies and transform regions and get people involved in their electorate and their local government. And so those are the things that excited me.
I understand you work with a variety of organizations and activist groups in the Atlanta area. So I'd love to hear about some of the organizing you did with Black Lives Matter, the Fight for 15, things like that.
So, yes, I helped to organize the Atlanta chapter of Black Lives Matter. I was at the very first meeting. It was actually called by a very forward-thinking comrade, Mary Hooks, and she called together a meeting, so I got involved with that. We had done a lot, particularly around addressing police violence.
Yeah.
I call it blue on black crime here in Atlanta. And that's actually another thing that inspired me to run, is because there were a lot of, there've been quite a few incidents in Georgia. We've been trying to at least have a trial for police officers.
Yeah.
We have not in the past 7 years. There have been, you know, over 70 shootings, 70 killings of civilians by police. And we have not once in those 7 years ever had a trial, let alone a conviction, just ever even a trial about it. So we've been really pushing for that, as well as marijuana decriminalization, because that is a big driver in the prison pipeline. And Georgia is actually number one for disparate marijuana arrests.
Yeah.
So, you know, for black and brown people being arrested at a disproportionate rate, we are number one for that. So those are two big things that we've been working on. And I realized with this new city that a lot of the positions that we were trying to replace, or a lot of the ordinances that we were trying to have changed as a brand new city, we would get to write those ordinances.
Right.
And we would get to select, you know, or vote on who the police chiefs were, or, you know, the city court system. So it just seems like a natural progression. I also worked with organized labor here in Atlanta, both for the Fight for 15, but then even my own job. At the time that I began working for the Sanders campaign, I was actually a paratransit bus operator.
Yeah.
here in Atlanta. And Atlanta Transit System, which is called MARTA, Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, decided to outsource over 300 bus operators and mechanics, really in an effort, to get out of its contract with the union,
right,
to get out of its pension obligations and its health insurance obligations that have been negotiated by organized labor. So we fought that for several months. The outsourcing happened and I lost my job, which really further radicalized me.
Yeah.
But good news is that a federal judge has actually overturned that outsourcing, issued an injunction, and those transit workers are going to get their jobs back. Well, hopefully, MARTA is still appealing that decision.
Yeah.
But as of right now, it looks like the court has ruled it, has ruled in our favor, and so those jobs will come back. So just being a part of those different movements was really what helped when it came time for me to run for office in terms of endorsements and volunteers. It was really just sort of a natural evolution.
Yeah, excellent. And yeah, so Atlanta is not a state with a big labor movement, right? It's a right to work state. But so I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about being involved in the labor movement in Georgia, in Atlanta, the pitfalls, but also the positives of the labor movement in Georgia.
Well, I think probably one of the, with the current administration that we have in office and the balance of the Supreme Court right now, we may be nationally moving to, a national right to work law.
Yeah.
And, overturning just decades of precedent that favored organized labor. And so I think it's sort of exciting and informative to be in this state to see how labor organizes and recruits when it's not automatic.
Yeah.
For workers to be enrolled. Like, how do you in a right to work state explain the value and importance of joining the union and supporting the union? So my work primarily has been with ATU,
right,
the transit union, but I was also a member of CWA, and I have been endorsed in this race by the Teamsters.
Yes. And so in, we've talked about local issues, we've talked about national issues. I found out about your campaign through the Democratic Socialists of America, who are very excited to have one of their own running for office. And so I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about the connections that you have to national groups and to thinking about running for local office in the context of building a broader movement across the country.
Well, I think it's very important, particularly in states where we only have a two-party system, fortunately, right now. So in states where Democrats are not in power, in red states, it's very important to build, to network nationally so that you can get a level of support, both financially and in terms of volunteers,
yeah,
that your party locally may not be able to supply. I don't think that we have a shortage of volunteers in Georgia, but it has been,
yeah,
definitely, it's been amazing the groundswell of financial support that I've got nationally, just being aligned with Our Revolution and Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Socialists of America, which, Bernie also came out of.
Right.
I traveled to New York to speak at the youth conference, signed up scores of volunteers, received thousands upon thousands of dollars, and at this point, tens of thousands of dollars in donations from across the country.
Yeah.
So I think that is very key in financing these insurgent campaigns, because even if you are able to garner support from your your local state party, which very often you will not be able to because they have their own establishment candidates that they prefer to support.
Right.
So it's very important for true progressives to network across state lines and to pull their resources across state lines into races that we can both win and that can have, you know, some notable impact on policy for a region.
Yeah, related to that, what has been the reaction of the sort of establishment Democrats to your campaign? How have they reacted to you, especially, I suppose, after your pretty overwhelming, you know, vote total in the first round of this election?
They have been quietly supportive.
Yeah.
There's always a set of political there's always a complicated political calculus. And so in my race, it was really historic. We have 7 city council districts and a mayor.
Right.
So 8 seats.
Yeah.
And we had over 71 candidates.
Wow.
For those 8 seats. And so, you know, those 71 people had to be many, many establishment Democrats in Georgia were afraid to endorse me or anyone in any of the races because they were afraid of who they might piss off or who they might piss off that was connected to one of the 71 candidates, because you know all of us know our different people.
Right.
So a lot of them just stayed out of the race, and then very often, and it's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Many state parties and state party leaders, because this is an overwhelmingly Democratic race and region.
Yeah.
Many of them have a policy of just not getting into races where there's a Democrat or Democrat. So their support has been tepid at best.
Right.
But having true progressives, unapologetic progressives, I really see us building a movement that's sort of like the Tea Party, where we're not afraid to endorse in intra-partisan races, you know, or non-partisan races.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, people like the DSA or our revolution are looking for bona fide progressive candidates. And like that's the only people that they're going to support, and they will support them even if they're running against another Democrat.
Yeah.
And they put money behind it. And then you do have a few courageous establishment Democrats like Ted Terry, who is the mayor of Clarkston, who is really a model for progressivism in Georgia. Right. He has raised the minimum wage of city workers to $15 an hour and made voting a municipal holiday.
Yeah.
And also decriminalized marijuana for under an ounce. Lessen the penalties. So that working class people are not just being locked up for smoking a joint, you know, it's been tepid, but like I said, there have been a few courageous people, and that is also the importance of having, the importance of having true progressives, get organized in a fundraising way and in a volunteer way to really influence local elections. Hopefully this is just practice for first a statewide movement, right, to get involved in politics at the state level and then in the national level.
Yeah.
This is, I think, been really good. It's been galvanizing for progressives because they understand, oh, when we get involved, when we start organizing in a very targeted way and supporting people in a very targeted way, we can win races. And if we can do this locally, we can do it on larger stages as well. I think the thing that is most powerful about this race, or even my campaign, is that I love Bernie, but I think where his campaign failed, I don't think this is a personal failure of Bernie,
mm-hmm.
but perhaps of the people that were around him and advising that campaign, is that there wasn't enough attention paid to people of color. I'm not sure that people of color who were in that campaign were listened to the way that they should have been. And Bernie made a very excellent class argument.
Yeah.
And I think that it's implied that people of color are, you know, more disproportionately affected by class disparities than whites. And so I think there was an assumption that people of color would understand that and would understand that the arguments that he was making about class inequality were implicitly also arguments about racial inequality.
Right.
And I think that, frankly, because Bernie was an old white man, black folks, people of color, did not implicitly get that he was speaking to them.
Yeah.
I knew that he was speaking to them, but I'm not sure that everyone else did.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that the progressive movement is going to have to do is find leaders of color and candidates of color to carry this message. And, you know, so when I speak about it, you know, rightly or wrongly, when I'm talking about income inequality and when I'm talking about working class families, the black and brown audiences that I speak to do implicitly get that I am speaking to them and that I'm speaking for them.
Yeah.
You know, and that I'm speaking about them. And so I think that is, you know, I don't necessarily go around making a lot of racial arguments. I think that my bona fides of Black Lives Matter speak volumes about my own racial politics, and that I can make these arguments of class and people of color get, you know, because the city is 89% African American and because I'm African American, people know that I'm talking about them. The best way to reach out to communities of color is by having candidates of color.
Yeah.
And instituting these policies in cities of color. So I know that, you know, if you look at a lot of the most progressive places, there are places like Seattle or Massachusetts or Northern California where you don't have a lot. Well, Northern California, you do have, you know, people of color.
Yeah.
But you know, in a lot of these most progressive cities, they tend to be smaller cities. They tend to be more white and more affluent. And so the idea is that, like, only rich white folks can afford to enact these kind of progressive policies.
Right.
And so it counters that. And I think it's going to be really important that the leadership of the Democratic Party specifically, but the left in general, that the leadership needs to look like its base of voters. And our base, I know that there's been all of this angst about how do we get working class white voters.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the most consistent voters in America are black women,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the most consistently progressive voters are black and brown folks. And so we need to grow the base of our party or of that movement.
Yeah.
With those folks, and make sure that we are running candidates in places and instituting policies in places that support those folks. And I do think that the big issue of these next few elections, and I think the next 20 years of America, the biggest challenge that we will face is income inequality and this growing disparity. Like the middle class has disappeared.
Yeah.
And so now we have a working class and a wealthy class. And we really need to keep hammering that truth into the public conversation that's happening. Right, and the political conversation that's happening.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's what I hope to do is to bridge that gap between, to bridge that racial gap for people to understand that whether you're red or yellow, black or white, that we are all suffering from income inequality for the past 30 years.
So what are the next steps here? When is the runoff?
The runoff is April 18th. So early voting has already begun. It will be going on for 3 weeks through April 18th, through the Friday before April 18th. And then on April 18th, that Tuesday, will be our election. And in addition to my race, when folks get in touch with me, they can find out about people that I am endorsing across other city council districts.
Yeah.
So that, you know, because once again, it's about being effective in implementing these policy changes. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's not something I can do unilaterally. I will need a vote of four and hopefully a progressively disposed mayor, you know, to make these changes happen.
How can people keep up with you?
They can get in touch with me at khalidcares.com. That's K-H-A-L-I-D as in David, cares.com. You can find out about me. You can find out about other races here in the city of South Fulton and in the state of Georgia.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.